What a joy it is to be with you again this weekend. I want to say thank you to Wayne and Kathleen and Leah and the leadership team for inviting me up here. It's been a wonderful weekend of desserts on Friday night with some of your leaders and service yesterday with soups afterwards and this morning and wet pair of pants and a great time with y'all. I know I also want to say a special thanks to all of you for being here because I know how it is when a guest preacher comes to town. It seems a little easier to stay in bed on a Sunday morning all cuddled up, and especially when that minister is coming to talk to you about generosity on the kickoff of the pledge campaign. So I appreciate you being here this morning. As Leah said, I've been here before. This is the fourth time I've been with you. In 2009, I was here as part of a study group with Roger and experienced the four services and getting a chance to meet with your board. 2010, I led a workshop on generosity and stewardship, and then had the privilege of preaching the kickoff sermon and to the Capital campaign, where we got to talk about those goldfish that were running around and swimming in the bowl too small. And then 2 years ago this weekend, I was here, and it was a lot colder when we celebrated the sanctuary, and I got to see what my small little commitment and contribution made to this. So for me as a California boy who doesn't really like snow and ice, you just clearly have won a special place in my heart for me to make these treks up here, way up north. Things, of course, have changed since my last visit 2 years ago. Roger is no longer with you, and you're blessed to have two wonderful ministers, Wayne and Kathleen, working with the awesome Leah during these days of transition. As I told you in 2010, you are an important congregation in our association, one of our leading congregations. You are this year the 19th largest in the land. And part of the reason I'm here this weekend is to remind you of your greatness and to talk to you about some of the challenges you have to prepare as you call your next minister in 2017. For the last 7 years, I have been the founding executive director of the UUMA, and I have learned a lot about growing a nonprofit organization. But prior to that, I served the only other Unitarian Universalist fellowship that has grown from small to large congregation status in Durham, North Carolina, the Eno River UU Fellowship. I followed the outstanding minister who led that congregation, that fellowship, for more than 20 years and saw it explode in growth. Sound a little familiar? So I know a little bit about what your next minister is going to face, and I know some things that you can do to help make sure that the next chapter of the fellowship is as wonderful as the previous ones have been. So I'm with you today because of my deep affection for you, my hopes and dreams for your success, and my care for your ministers and your staff. But I'm also here because today is the day you kick off your stewardship campaign. And I know a few things more fun in the life of a congregation than the stewardship campaign, right? I'm not feeling the love here. I mean, come on, it's the stewardship campaign. This is so much fun. This is a great time in the life of your congregation, of any congregation, because now is the time we get to affirm and celebrate our commitment and generosity to this religious community. Why is it fun? Well, because I don't think there are too many things more fun than giving our money away to something we care about and love. I also saw that this month's theme is on liberation. There are few things that hold people more captive than their thoughts, their fears, their stories about money. What a wonderful time to celebrate generosity, reflect on how our relationship with money may be holding us hostage, and to answer the questions that Parker Palmer asks in our reading. Do we believe in a world of scarcity, or do we believe in a world of abundance? Our answers to these questions not only help us determine how generous the universe is, but also will help predict how generous we wish to be as well. And the answers might just set us free. What makes people generous? If I asked you to quickly name three or four of the most generous people you have known in your life, who would they be? My hunch is that your list would include not only people who were generous with their money, but also people who may or may not have had much money at all, but were generous in all aspects of their life. One of the most generous people in my life was my grandmother, or my nanny, as we called her. She did not have much money, but she always made me feel as if she had plenty to give. Whether it was the perfect Christmas present, or my favorite raisin toast for breakfast, or the time to play a game of Yahtzee with me. Generous people are like that. They seem to have an abundance of love, time, an abundance of attention to give away. In the words of the Buddhist author Sharon Salzberg, people who are generous awaken in us openness, love, and delight. Most of us would like to be people who awaken others openness, love, and delight, but it seems that some people are able to do it more often than others. Why? It may have been a coincidence that my grandmother was the only religious person in my family. But it is not a coincidence that studies show people who attend churches, synagogues, mosques, and fellowships give more money and more time away than others. Perhaps the world's religions have a thing to teach us about generosity. Every religion I know of encourages generosity from its followers. The Judeo-Christian tradition recommends tithing. One of the five pillars of Islam asks followers to give away a percentage of their net worth each year. And the first of Buddhism's 10 paramis, or qualities of the awakened mind, is dana, the practice of generosity. The Buddha felt so strongly about giving and generosity that he always began his work with new students by teaching them dana. The Buddha believed that no true spiritual life was possible without a generous heart. He said that generous people could always enter into any group without fear. How do we cultivate a generous and fearless heart? Here's one hint. Take a moment now to imagine in your mind's eye the Hubble telescope of the Milky Way. And imagine, if you can, a picture of the entire universe. What do you see? Do you see a place of abundance, a place where anything is possible, where there are enough of the basic things that we need, food, love, shelter, and companionship for everyone? Or do you see a universe where goods are in short supply? A place where only a few can win, only a few have what they really want and need. There was a time in my life when I would look at a picture of the universe and I would feel my smallness in the big, big picture of life. In those days, I was not someone who was faithful. I was not someone who was very generous. I was not someone who did much wishing on the stars. Today, if someone asks me to show them a picture of God, I would show them a picture from the Hubble telescope. Today, I'm someone who believes not that I am a speck of sand on the endless beach that is the universe, but that the possibilities for my and your life, and for the difference we can make in the lives of others, is beyond our comprehension, as is how large our generous hearts can become. People who are generous, who are willing to give away their most precious gifts, have figured out intuitively, or maybe with study and practice, the secret that the Buddha taught, that the universe is a place of abundance, not scarcity. They have discovered that there is more goodness and possibility in the universe than they could ever give away. They have learned that we are not diminished by what we give, whether it is our time, our money, or our love, but that we are replenished. Now, this is a different lesson than we are often taught in our country. Sharon Salzberg tells the story of a Buddhist meditation master from Thailand who came to visit the United States several years ago. After a short time in our country, he observed that Buddhism was taught and practiced very differently in the United States than it was in Asia. In Asia, it seems, the sequence of training and practice is first generosity, then morality, and lastly, meditation or insight. In our country, the training and teaching is reversed. We begin with meditation and insight, then morality, and lastly, generosity. Even if we are not Buddhist, many of us can relate to this sequence when we consider how generous we wish to be. Many of us usually start with ourselves. When we put together our budgets, we begin with everything we need to live on: food, mortgage, rent, car payments, credit card bills, etc. And if we have money left after that, then we will put something into savings. And maybe after all that, we'll then give to our favorite charities, including our religious community. What would happen if we lived more like the Buddhists in Asia do? Instead of deciding everything we need for our own personal needs, insights, and transformation first, we begin with others. For more than 20 years, my wife Kathleen and have been able to do this, at least with our money. We start by putting 10% off the top, before taxes, into our tithing fund, so that we can give away usually 5% to our religious community and then the other 5% to people and organizations that are doing good work in the world. This spiritual practice has transformed our lives like no other, and I have seen how it has transformed other folks' lives as well. I've watched the two congregations I serve go from giving away 2% of their budget to 10% in less than 5 years. I go around and have been doing this for a while where I go preach and teach around generosity and abundance for a long time. And to be honest, everywhere I go, it's happened. But what if you're here this morning and your mortgage is in trouble? You've just lost your job, or perhaps the recent stock market gyrations have you really worried about your retirement income. If I were you sitting here this morning listening to me, I would think, I might even be asking, so how do we believe in abundance now, Mr. Preacher Man? I know how it is during the annual drive for people who are struggling. Sadly, too often they stay away from their religious community at a time when they and their religious community need each other most. Which is why on Celebration Sunday, which we called our kickoff to our pledge campaign at Eno River in 2009, we asked people to make their pledge and get a surprise that we promised they would be talking about for years to come. Now, I know I'm sure this doesn't happen here, but in many congregations I've been, whenever you say it's the kickoff to the pledge Sunday, amazingly, people stay home. I don't never got that, right? Probably doesn't happen here, but in many places it does. So what we told them is, come, because you're going to be talking about this for years to come. And what happened? It worked. Our attendance went up 125 people on that Sunday from the year before. Well, when we invited people to come forward to make their pledge, we told them the surprise. The theme of our stewardship campaign that year was transforming lives, transforming community, boldly going where Eno River has never gone before. Guess where that came from. I told the congregation that now in these tough economic times, and if you remember, 2009 was tough times, I said that now is the time we had to be bold, which is why every man, woman, and child that morning would get an envelope which would have from anywhere from $5 to $500 in it, with an instruction that simply said, we invite you to transform lives, transform community, by taking this money and putting it where it can make the boldest difference in a life and in the community. And then tell us what you did. We gave away almost $8,000 that Sunday. My favorite stories, I think, were of 2 8-year-old girls who each individually got $250 in their envelopes. One of them was at the congregation that day for the very first time. Her parents told me she couldn't stop talking about it for months, and I didn't have the heart to tell her, this may never happen in your life again. People sent us stories about changing lives because of the money they received. Some took their $5 and multiplied it and shared it with others to send money to poor schools. Others gave their money to friends and family members who had recently lost their jobs. Some gave it to the homeless towards the effort to fight for marriage equality. That congregation, like virtually every congregation, struggled to make their budget in 2009. But the toughest times in our lives are when our faith is tested and challenged the most. We did make our budget, and hopefully we reminded people, and especially our children, what is possible with faith, commitment, and bold generosity. To prepare for this week, and I've been reading your budget. I actually like doing that kind of thing. And I've been reviewing your goals for this year's stewardship campaign. One of the things I discovered in my research, I found a bit stunning, and some of the staff and leaders have here as well. As I said earlier, you are the 19th largest congregation in the country. But you have the 89th largest budget. 19th biggest, 89th biggest budget. Now, I think there's probably two ways you can look at this. You are really good at managing your money, or you are short-staffed, and perhaps your staff are underpaid. Now, I'm somebody who told you in 2010 that I was worried you were practicing clergy abuse because you were asking your ministers to preach four times every weekend. So I encourage you to raise money so you didn't have to do that anymore. Well, given that, you should know that I do have a concern about how hard you work your outstanding staff. And I know that you do too. The year ahead is a critical one in the life of this fellowship. Too often, people hold back on their giving when they are in a transition year. When I considered to put my name in the hopper to serve Eno River, I was concerned about their finances. During candidating week, I told the financial leaders in the congregation they were a great congregation, except for their budget, which had a $30,000 shortfall. I did accept their call to be their minister, and we fixed that shortfall quickly. But I want you to know that ministers will be looking at what you do in the year ahead and how generous that you choose to be as they consider putting their names in for Fox Valley. Your pledge matters. In some ways, it matters this year more than it ever has before. The good news is that you're off to a great start. Your board of trustees has already made their pledges for the year, and they have increased them by 6.8%. Pretty cool. When I preached here in 2010, I told you I thought your capital campaign goal was too low, which didn't make the capital campaign chairs very happy with me. But I told you I thought it was too low. And that was because in listening and reviewing your history and getting to know who you are and how important this fellowship was to you in this community, I knew you would dig deep so that more adults and children could experience the love and embrace of this fellowship both today and tomorrow. And I was right. You blew by your goal, and you were able to do even more than you dreamed you could do. I believe the same thing today. This year's campaign motto is as simple as 3-4-5, which speaks to the goals you have for raising salaries, becoming a stronger partner in our larger faith, funding your ministerial search, and inviting each of you to increase your pledge by at least 5%. When I heard the campaign's motto, I reversed it in my head, and I thought 5-4-3. Because I'm imagining it as you beginning a countdown to blasting off to a new ministry, new explorations and new adventures to places you haven't even dreamed. A blast off that will be fueled by your generosity and your commitment to the people inside and outside this fellowship. Parker Palmer says, "The quality of our active lives depends heavily on whether we assume a world of scarcity or a world of abundance. So does the quality and shape of the life and ministry you co-create and share in this fellowship." I leave you this morning with these words from Brian Swim in his book, The Universe is a Green Dragon. "Our deepest desire is to share our riches And this desire is rooted in the dynamics of the cosmos. Take supernovas as your models. When they had filled themselves with riches, they exploded in a vast cosmic celebration of their work. What would you have done? Would you have had the courage to flood the universe with your riches? Or would you have talked yourself out of it by pleading that you were too shy? Or hoarded your riches by insisting that they were yours and others did not deserve them because they did not work for them? Remember the supernova's extravagant generosity and celebration of being. I know that it would not be very Midwestern or Appletonian to call yourself what I know to be true. The Fox Valley Unitarian Universalist Fellowship is a supernova that is preparing to explode with even more riches than anyone can imagine. May we remember that supernova's generosity and celebrate our being every day by practicing as much generosity as our hearts and our spirits will allow. May it be so. Amen.